Because, you know, these games were not designed to be played on a hard-ass plastic D-pad for, like, you know, 8 hours at a time. That's just not, the human body is not meant for that sort of torture. But,
howdy, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 287, and I'm your host, Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And Matt is in the wind, as they say.
He's, soaring through the skies.
Yeah, something like that. Hey, did you catch last week's episode where I had to creatively fix our episode number in the intro?
I thought that was fantastic.
It's like, I think we just copied a doc and then the numbers got mixed up, and Matt reads anything that's on the show notes.
That is very true.
And so we had to do a little bit of creative editing to fix it.
I thought that was awesome. And I actually really enjoyed the episode. I'm not just saying that. Oh, I listened to a lot of podcasts and I was like, these guys are great.
Thanks,
and now
buddy.
I'm back to ruin it all.
Oh, you know, what's funny is that as much as I enjoy podcasting, which I really do, I also enjoy listening to episodes that I am not on.
it's true. It was really good because I didn't know what was coming next.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess maybe it all just boils down to we try to, you know, make the podcast that we want to listen to, and we hope that you enjoy it as well. So maybe that's why that works for us, to listen to our own podcast.
I think that's the case.
Yeah,
I think that's the case. I know we don't.
I listen to our podcast at least once after we record it. If not more.
You kind of have to.
Right, exactly. But sometimes I actually edit it, put it out, and then listen to it again in the car, which is weird, but there you have it.
And by the way, if you are a longtime listener, you guys need to send Scott all sorts of love and stuff, because I edited some stuff for the past couple of months because of Scott having some life hiccups. And holy God, that is a very time-consuming and unforgiving thing to do all the time. So thanks for doing it for like 248 episodes or something like
no
that.
No problem, man. Matt started out, I think he did the first 30 to 40 episodes, and then it was kind of like,
yeah, then he moved to New York, and he was living on a couch for a while. Yeah. So it got hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'd like to do for episode 300?
What's
and
that?
This may be of interest to only us, but I'd love to kind of just list the crazy shit that's happened in our lives between episode 1 and episode 300, because it's like unbelievable how many changes have happened to all of us. And most of them have been relatively positive. Like we've just changed a lot. Life has changed a lot over the course of this podcast. And coming up on episode 300, it's just odd to think about like where we were when we started and where we are now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And there may be more on that topic by the time we get to episode 300. So we'll leave it at that.
Exactly.
Cool. So on this week's episode, I think we'll get into, I know you want to talk about Iron Marines, even though we talked about it last week, but you played the poo out of it. So we're going to do that. We'll also have in-progress reviews of Life is Strange Before the Storm and the SNES Classic, which actually came out today. So we're recording on Friday, September 29th in the PM, and you do have your SNES Classic. And then I just want to say a few quick words about The Orville, which is the new Seth MacFarlane show on Fox. And then we'll talk about some news and maybe relish in some old classic gaming moments, since we've been playing games for a very long time. And the SNES Classic is out today, and we basically just bought all those same games over again today, which is, I'm happy to do, because I love the Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's good
stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. What was I going to say? I know we don't really talk so much about like what we're up to, but I noticed that you've been playing Agents of Mayhem lately.
Yeah. So this, you know, I bought this right before I went over to PAX. And then when I got back from PAX, I was without power for like over a week. And,
right.
Without water for a few days, and then without internet for almost 2 weeks. And so I, well, let me, I guess I should say this. The good news about Agents of Mayhem that made me fall in love with the game is I got power back first, and you can play Agents of Mayhem with no internet connection.
Oh, cool. I did not know that.
Which is just a wonderful thing when you don't have an internet connection. So the game requires no internet connection. And I've really actually been enjoying it. I met a bunch of the voice cast out there when I was at PAX, and they were just an absolute delight. Super, super cool. Very, very fun group. And came back and played the game, and I've been loving it, man. It's like a silly 1980s popcorn action movie. There's so much style to it. There's so much like love and life in this game. Is it 100% polished? Is the gunplay perfect? No. Does it chug on my Xbox One? Yes, it does, because I have an old Xbox and the game chugs sometimes. The music is great though, and I'm just, you know, I'm having a ball with it. And the thing that that really kind of breaks my heart is I just read that Volition did a huge series of layoffs because of the sales of this game. So that's just the shitty reality that we live in the games industry right now.
It's just awful, especially with a game like this, which I think at some point in the future, this will sort of be viewed as a game that was like critically overlooked, you know? Because there's so much good stuff that you can point to in this game and go like, hey, you know, did you like Borderlands? Like, well, you kind of get some of what you liked out of that game in this one. Do you like the meta in Overwatch? Well, you can get some of that in the characters in this game. Do you like voice acting? Like, I don't think there's a span of 5 minutes in this game where somebody is not talking to somebody else. And I'm just amazed at how much dialogue. Oh, yeah.
There's a ton of it. And you know what's really interesting is I think there's something to the effect of like 10 to 15 different playable characters in this game. You can run the missions with any of them, and each one of them have unique dialogue.
Yes.
Depending on the narrative. So like if you played the game a second time, you could have a completely different experience. I would venture to say that it has like, you know, as much dialogue as like some like RPGs. I mean, it's just, yeah. There's a lot going on. There's an absolute lot going on.
I agree. And it's just amazing that it seems to trigger like in the strangest places when you would play other games, especially in an open world game, dialogue kind of triggers like all over the place in this game. And it's just nice to see something like that, where you never really feel like you're just completely lost in a game like this. Like the characters are always talking because it's like a big team, you know, there's like four or five supporting characters back at the main base, and there's always something going on. And, you know, even though the game world itself doesn't have a lot of life in the NPCs, like the main and supporting character audio, like more than makes up for that in the game. So it's just really too bad. But I'm glad to see that you're playing it and you're enjoying it, which I think is super cool.
Yeah, man. I agree. Like I listened to the episode and you pointed out, you know, some of the problems you had with the game and some of the stuff that you liked. And, you know, I agree with everything that you said. I think one of the issues that, you know, as we were just talking, it kind of popped into my head. It doesn't do anything like super great, but it does so many things very well.
But this is what I loved. And I keep saying this is what I loved about the era during the Xbox 360 life cycle, where you'd get all these like what I would call like double A games, which were like, they're not going to be, you know, earth shattering or life changing, but you know, they are games that by themselves are really fun to play and offer some really great experiences without being like a mainstream title or an indie, right? So I'm talking about like a game like Fuse that we had a ton of fun with. Like it was not a, you know, like a critical success, but with four people playing it and all the great voice actors that we love voicing the characters, like that was a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, there were games like, what was that like Time Shift and like all these weird, you know, it was basically like all these companies were making like first and third person shooters with weird mechanics, and like all those games were great. And I feel like this kind of like is one of those games where it's like a 7 or an 8, but it's a very super solid 7 or 8, you know?
Right.
And there's no reason not to play it. Yeah. Which is really too bad, because there's just so much other stuff going on that kind of like takes the oxygen away from a game like this, when other games like, you know, PUBG and like now Cuphead and Forza and FIFA and all these other gigantic titles that are coming out you know, just kind of like take all the oxygen out of the room. And then a game like that kind of just ends up being something that you play like in the summer, which is really too bad. But anyways, that's, I think we've ranted enough on that game, but I'm glad you enjoy it and we will continue to play it.
News.
All right. So yesterday, the Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer dropped. I actually watched it live. I was sitting at a place waiting for it to pop up. This was one of my favorite games from last generation. Absolutely loved it. I think we ranted and raved about it, as did, you know, many, many other gaming sites. So I was curious what this one was going to all be about. So we have kind of an information breakdown about the trailer. Have you watched the trailer yet by chance?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
You did. So it's only a couple minutes long. It's, you know, I guess there were a lot of things revealed, but you really had to look deeply. The first big thing is that, of course, Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to be a prequel. That was kind of speculated for a very long time. There was a leak a little while back that had the map and some information that, you know, someone left a server open someplace and people got information. Mm-hmm. But it is looking like a prequel to Red Dead Redemption, which I think is pretty cool. A lot of people that I know are very sick of prequels, but I always was curious about the story of Dutch's gang and you know, what the West was like a little bit earlier than 1911, which was the time when Red Dead Redemption was set. So we are getting a prequel. You're not playing as Marsden. At least they're not revealing that you are yet. You're going to be playing as a character by the name of Arthur Morgan, who looks to be a sort of rough and tumble gangster type character. Not gangster like Al Capone style, but sort of like a Western gangster. Does not look to be a nice gentleman by any means. Like I very much think that you're going to be playing at least a very morally gray character in this game. One thing I'm curious about is if they're going to go the GTA 5 route and let you play as multiple protagonists throughout the game, which I think would be great. I like that in GTA 5 quite a bit. You got to see the world from different perspectives, which I thought was neat. That happened a little bit, spoiler alert, in Red Dead Redemption, of course, where you play as Marsden's son near the end of the game. What was his name? Like Skippy Marsden or something?
I don't know. It left a lot to be desired, but you know, yeah, it was very interesting nonetheless. I mean, the trailer felt like a Rockstar game trailer, you know? Like the trailer, that could have been L.A. Noir, could have been Bully, it could have been GTA, but you know what it is. And I think you know what you're getting out of a game like this. And I think it's really just going to boil down to, like you said, the devil is in the details, right? Is it going to be multiple characters? Is there going to be like, what's the multiplayer component going to look like? You know, especially with GTA Online being so popular, continues to be popular.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how many people play that. And I remember, I don't know what episode it was at this point. It was fucking like 5 or 6 years ago, we were still doing the show, but I was, you know, so into that multiplayer when it came out, because it was, I mean, you got the whole map and there's just people running around the map, crashing planes and just going fucking crazy. It was the most insane experience for a while. And then it just got to the point where we moved on to other stuff. I think like when we were playing Mass Effect or something like that, something came out. I just moved away from it and never went back. But GTA 5 multiplayer was great and people still play it every single day. And it's been, what, 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, those like shark doubloons or whatever the currency is in that game, those are like on sale like every other week, I think, in the marketplace. So there's definitely still an audience for that game, which is crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they did reveal the character of Dutch, who, of course, is back. You're playing as a member of his gang. Other than that, like there's not too much information. They kind of flash to a female character in the trailer as well, which some people are speculating is going to be Marsden's wife.
Oh, cool.
Because it's kind of hinted at that their relationship is what makes him leave the gang. So they're probably waiting, since we're still quite a ways out. It's spring 2018. This game is launching.
I believe that's right.
They're probably going to do a big Marsden trailer at some point and say, hey, look, he is in the game. He's going to have to be in the game because he was a member of Dutch's gang. we just haven't seen him yet. So they're probably going to do some sort of really big reveal at an event someplace, or maybe just do, you know, what Rockstar does and do whatever the hell they want, you know. But we will see Marsden, so I'm assuming that his overall story is going to be really told, probably from the perspective of another character. But eventually, I think we will get to see a little bit more of his life, which is exciting. I thought he was a super, super cool character.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, Rockstar is really great at telling a story in the context of a, you know, of like a kind of an open world adventure game, which is hard to do. So it'll definitely be worth checking out when it comes out, regardless of, you know, your knowledge or interest in the previous title. I think it's still worth playing.
One quick note, we talk about this all the time, but I think what makes Rockstar so good at open world is their open worlds are actually really interesting to explore.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems I have with Agents of Mayhem is there is no way on earth I'm going to walk around that map and look at stuff because it's just not interesting.
Weird because it's a small map too, and it's a very dense map. But there's, like you said, there's just not a lot to look at, oddly enough, even though each area in the map is like very visually distinct from one another. Again, right. it's lacking that life. And so this is good contrast in which like the world, you know, Rockstar worlds have a lot of life. Like I keep bringing up Bully because it's like a really, you know, it's one of my favorite Rockstar games. And there's like something to do, something to look at around every corner. Same thing in L.A. Noire, which is, you know, replication of LA back in the day. And so there's like lots of things to see and, you know, things to listen to. So, I think that's kind of what puts the icing on the cake. Even in the original Red Dead, you could kind of walk into saloons and just kind of check out what people are doing at the bar and stuff like that. And it was just very compelling, to keep looking around. And so, so I would expect, you know, more of the same in this in a good way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And yeah, so it's exciting stuff. We'll obviously be reporting on this as we get a little bit closer, but it's good. It's looking great. Visually, it looks great. And, you know, I think it's going to sell a bajillion copies and people are going to love it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's move on. Since we're almost at October, we can talk about October's Games with Gold for Xbox, which I'm always super excited about. This assortment of games is pretty good, and it being October, I think they chose some appropriate games. You have two sort of more like puzzly atmospheric games. You get Gone Home console edition for all of October, if I'm not mistaken, which is fantastic. And you know, if you've never played it, like, now is the time because you're going to get it in like 2 days. And for the second half of October, you get The Turing Test, which is a I believe is a first person puzzle walking simulator kind of game. And the studio that created that game previously created another Games with Gold title called Pneuma Breath of Life, which was sort of a like an interesting kind of like introspective game about like life and living as told through like doing first person puzzles. So I would expect The Turing Test to be pretty interesting as well, just for that, just on that same note. And then on Xbox 360, which, you know, all these titles now are going to be backwards compatible to Xbox One, or forwards, I guess. You'll get Rayman 3 HD and then Medal of Honor Airborne. So I don't think I've played Medal of Honor Airborne or Rayman 3D, but I haven't played a lot of Medal of Honor titles since some of the later ones, like at the end of Xbox 360.
Yeah, me either. It's been a long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, free games are free games, so there's no reason not to get them. I've mentioned this many times before. Even if you have a live subscription and you, for some reason, don't have access to a console or access to, you know, whatever you're going to be playing it on, you can always go out to the website, you know, out to the market on the website and still add these games, like buy them so that they're in your account, so that when you do get your 360, you do get your Xbox One, these games will be waiting in your library for you as long as you are a live subscriber. So there's no reason not to get them as they become available to you. So that's really exciting.
It is good stuff.
Yeah, I actually am looking forward to playing Gone Home again because I played it on PC. And so I'd be happy to play again on console. So it's a
relaxing experience when you don't think it's a horror game.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's really funny about that is that even though I was told that it was a horror game, I was still like a little hesitant. And I've told this story before, but it's worth bringing up again that I think one of the first games or maybe the first game to be, I guess, like in the genre of the walking simulator is Dear Esther. And there was I played the game with the developer commentary turned on and they kind of remarked on how, you know, being a game like that, you know, the first of its kind in a way, you know, their players, their play testers were sort of they realized that people were approaching the game as if it were a horror game because it was just so, you know, these games are very quiet and tend to be very like you're alone in an environment with your thoughts and you're just kind of like left to, you know, ponder things that are happening in the game. And then just by virtue of you being alone and not really seeing a lot of action in the game, you start to think like, oh my gosh, is this actually going to be scary? Is something going to jump out at me? And it's like, it's nothing like
right,
that.
Right.
It's nothing like that at all. Gone Home has more in common with like Life is Strange than it does with like Layers of Fear. You know what I mean?
I think when that game first came out, though, I think the general buzz was, well, don't tell anybody what it's really about. And I remember I played Gone Home the week it was released, and I remember being terrified because there's just so many quiet moments where I was like, what am I opening? What's behind this door? Yeah. Like, what the fuck is going to happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think people are...
Up until the end, I was sure that it's something like, you know, a Ringu was going to pop out of the sink and, like, bite me or something. Mm. I don't know.
I think people are just so... I mean, we're familiar with, like, the trope of the mansion, right? Like, and we've seen mansion games, like, as far back as The Seventh Guest. And we know that spooky things happen in mansions, so... I think it just comes with the territory.
Indeed.
Cool. Let's see. Let's talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This was an interesting story that came out this week.
Yeah. So for those that have been listening for a long time, we are fans of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on this show. Some people have kind of moved away from the show. Other people never really started watching it. But I always loved first of all, I love Coulson. I think he's a fantastic character. And I've grown to really enjoy the show. It just reminds me of... you know, just something silly from the 80s when you really think about it. It's like super agents fighting against, you know, monsters and space demons and all sorts of crazy shit. It's like we don't really get shows like this too much anymore. So the ratings have continued to slip. They are now moving the show to Friday nights, which is sort of a bad place. But the show actually gets a big chunk of its ratings from, you know, online and from you know, Hulu and later on in Netflix because they moved the show over to Netflix. So I don't think they're sweating it too badly. But there were apparently a lot of executives at ABC that wanted to get rid of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after season four, which was the latest season. And Disney actually stepped in and saved the show, which is something they don't really pull rank on all too often. A lot of times Disney will, you know, kind of let ABC do its thing and obviously choose its programming and stuff. But when it got wind that it was getting rid of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it said, no, we want you to keep it. And there's a couple of reasons why. Part of it's I'm speculating the reasons, but part of it's more than likely true. They originally were banking on the Inhumans being better reviewed and using the Inhumans perhaps in the place of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the future. But the Inhumans kind of is off to a rough start. It's actually premiering tonight. But people have been watching it for a very long time because it was in IMAX on September 1st, and the reviews have been not so great. And they've already actually gone on record saying that this is going to be its only season.
Oh, wow.
And it's like eight episodes. So we likely, unless something really strange happens, will not be getting another Inhumans season. So apparently, Disney steps in and says, you know, not only do we want Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to come back, but we want it to reach that magical 100 episodes so we can, you know, have that syndication number that is important for broadcast television. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, I just thought that was pretty cool that, you know, that the mouse came in and saved this show, which I happened to quite enjoy.
I mean, that's unfortunate because I felt like the last arc of this past season was really fantastic. Like this whole kind of like darkest timeline arc of the show, you know, because I kind of, ebb, you know, my interest in the show kind of ebbs and flows, but I've always stayed with it. And just this last part I thought was like fantastic. I thought it was just an interesting way to kind of turn the show on its head a little bit.
Yeah, I think definitely they split the last season into three different chunks, mm-hmm. Sort of like mini seasons that you can almost watch
like little, like,
on their
comic
own
runs, which I thought was cool, you know?
Yeah, I thought it was a really great way of doing things. And I thought the last one was by far the best thing that the show has ever done. So they did an evil matrix where the agents, you know, had to go and see, like you said, the darkest timeline, which was just really, really cool to see. So you got to see some old familiar faces and, you know, it was very different. So I thought that was cool. Next season, they're apparently going to be in space. There was a new teaser image released of a space port type window and the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo. So we're going to get some space stuff, which is awesome.
Yeah, that was quite the cliffhanger. I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see what happens. Would there be like a tie-in to like Guardians of the Galaxy somehow with that? Or is that just not even...
I mean, one of the reasons I think why the show was on the chopping block is there's a long time ago, Jeff Loeb said everything's all connected. And he's been kind of catching flack for that over the years because we slowly started to realize that, well, you know, nothing from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to directly impact any of the Marvel films. And you're not really seeing, especially the past couple seasons, you're not really seeing characters from the Marvel films appear on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It just hasn't happened since I think like Sif from Thor came on the show, you know, and that's pretty much it. We had Sif and we had Nick Fury at the end of season one when they were still kind of really trying to make everything click. But since then we haven't seen anything. So I don't know if there's going to be any direct tie-ins with the movie verse. I think they try, but I think there is not a whole lot of communication going on.
Yeah. I mean, that's too bad, but the show by itself is still interesting. And it's like, it's one of those things, and this will come up later in the podcast, where it's like, it might not be the best version of what it can be, but I'm still happy that it exists and is on television.
Absolutely.
Because I would not be watching something else in its place. Like I prefer to watch this. Like that's kind of my feeling about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, you know, it's not perfect by any means, but you know, you get to see people with superpowers that are pretty good actors having fun. Yep.
And that's good enough for me for sure.
Yes.
So you got some travel coming up, buddy.
Yeah, so this is kind of cool. This is just for our listeners and followers. If you are going to TwitchCon in October, I will be there.
Awesome.
I'm going for my day job, which is Titanfall Assault. So I will be there streaming some Titanfall Assault and hanging out with people and showing off the game. So if you happen to be at TwitchCon, which is in outside of LA in Long Beach this year. It was in San Diego. I wish it was in San Diego again, but it's in Long Beach. Come say hi, please. Shoot me a message, and I'll make some time to come hang out. I would love to see you.
Yeah, that's great. I'm super stoked for you, just because it's like something different. We've been going to PAX, and you've been going to Comic-Con for so long, and just to like do something like this, I think will be super fun and really cool.
Yeah, it will be. I actually, I was going to go to TwitchCon last year. I had tickets and everything. And then things just didn't work out. It was like way too expensive, just to go all the way to San Diego. But, this time it's a little different. So I'm going to go and do my thing and, try and have as much fun as possible.
Sweet. Apparently I'm looking at the website. Apparently there is a talent show. So you better get started on that so you can compete
in
the talent show.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. I don't even know what I would do.
I was just about to say, I need to figure out what my talent is first.
Something that would be appropriate for the stage.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. right, and we're back. We're going to talk a little bit about Life is Strange Before the Storm, which is the prequel. Prequels are popular, aren't they? It's the prequel to Life is Strange. Right off the bat, the thing that's a little strange about this game is that the voice cast is different from the Life is Strange proper game, I think.
Which was one of the best parts of the whole fucking game.
And that's what I mean, but that was a function of the SAG-AFTRA, the voice actors strike. Yeah.
Which just apparently ended this week.
Which is that's a weird thing, but I'm not going to pretend to know how business works in games, right? So,
right.
And why that had to be that way. But regardless, Life is Strange Before the Storm puts you in the shoes of Chloe Price and explores her relationship with Rachel Amber. So I'm not entirely through the first episode. I believe there are three main episodes with a bonus episode featuring Max if you got the deluxe edition, but I don't know when that bonus episode will be released. But regardless, I'm partway through the first episode of the game, so this is sort of a review in progress. And of course, I don't want to spoil anything, so it wouldn't make any difference if I was through the episode or not. But the thing that is really interesting about this game, and I think the thing that kind of helps to propel this game forward, is your knowledge of what happens in Life is Strange, like the, you know, core game, if you will. Because all through, you know, the original Life is Strange, you hear about Rachel Amber and you're like, what happened to Rachel Amber? Who is she? And it kind of just becomes this thread that kind of carries through the entire game. And it's not really always like the central story of the game, but it's something that comes up.
It was one of the things that really drew me in, though, because you are just so curious about what happened to this girl.
Yes.
And it was spooky because, you know, it, if you ever listen to any true crime stuff or watch true crime stuff, when people disappear, it's the scariest fucking thing ever, because you never know what happened to them. And most of the time things don't end well for people that disappear. So the story of Rachel Amber for me was always very, very intriguing, which is why I was really excited about Before the Storm.
Yes. And I agree with you 100%. I think that's kind of the allure of that and what kind of pulls you into this game. Because you probably have an idea of, you know what Chloe Price becomes in Life is Strange, and you see her, you know, in Before the Storm, and this game takes place, I believe, I want to say 3 years prior to Life is Strange. And so you learn in Life is Strange what happened to her, but in Before the Storm, you are like living what happened to her, and you kind of see her morphing from one kind of person into another, you know what I mean? And it's like interesting to see her, how she deals with events in her life, which, you know, ultimately lead to her becoming the person she is in Life is Strange. The other thing I'll mention is, of course, you want to learn more about Rachel Amber, and they really, I think, nail this character in the game in the sense that she is like completely, like she's like electric in the way that you would want her to be, because you heard so much about her in Life is Strange.
That's great. That's really great. Like, I'm glad they portrayed her well.
Yeah, like she, like her character is sort of like, you cannot ignore her because her personality is just so infectious. You know what I mean? And so when she, you know, when you encounter her in the game, it's like, oh my gosh, this is that person. The person that had like, you know, she has all this like life and energy and she's like really incredible. And you're like, oh my God, this is her, which is really cool. Obviously this game does not feature time travel because that was, you know, something unique to another character in the game. But instead they have this weird mechanic in the game, which is called backtalk, which makes sense for Chloe, right? But if she gets into a dialogue-based situation that she does not agree with, you kind of have this ability to talk your way out of certain situations through this mini game in which you choose dialogue options to like win an argument, which is kind of interesting. So
That's amazing.
To not spoil anything, it's like one of the first things you learn about in the game. You're trying to get into like this concert, and so you need to like back talk with the bouncer to convince him to let you go into the concert because you're not like old enough, or he doesn't want to let you in or something. So so you basically have to figure out like if you're going to insult him, or you need to kind of like go toe to toe with him verbally in order to win this contest. And so that kind of is the one of the unique gameplay aspects in the game. But I think even more than you know, if Life is Strange tried to kind of like hook some players in with the narrative and hook other players in with like the rewind mechanic, this game I think kind of goes all in on, you know, narrative and relationships and like dialogue and things like that. And I think that's kind of what is going to make this game important and special, you know, because I think when the first game came out, it definitely kind of formed a community around it of people that looked at that game and thought like, yes, this is my life too. You know, I can identify with the things that are happening in this game. Being a teenager is hard, right? And so I think that's really what they're kind of going into with this game as well. Something that I will also say about the game from a very positive perspective is that, and again, not to spoil anything, there is something, there seem to be really interesting things that you can do in this game that are completely skippable and or missable.
Okay.
Which I think is really interesting, because I encountered a situation within the game in which I was given the option to do or not do something. And I was just like, oh, you know, maybe I'll just blow this off, but let me just see what happens. Right. And then it turned out to be like this really amazing thing. And if you read reviews of this episode, you'll probably learn what that thing is right away. But I would encourage people not to read the reviews and just to play the episode, because there are some definitely like some really kind of like cool moments in the game that you're like, wow, this was really well like scripted and thought out and implemented into the game. So I'll just leave it at that.
I know while Ashley Burch did not return to voice Chloe because of the SAG-AFTRA strike, she did lend a little bit of her writing to the game. I think she's credited as either a writer or a producer this time around for Before the Storm. So I'm glad that she was a part of it. I know the character of Chloe means a lot to her. Mm-hmm. So it's good that she had something to do with it. But I would have loved if she had been back.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I don't want to, you know, speak ill of anyone, but my, you know, just my initial kind of like visceral reaction to Chloe, you know, when I first encountered her in the game, like when I first kind of like took control of her, was like, you know, maybe they were trying to match too closely Ashley Burch's Chloe and not like, you know what I mean? So that kind of put me off like at the beginning of the game. But once I started playing more, like all that kind of like fell by the wayside, and I just sort of began to accept, you know, the new actor as Chloe. So I wouldn't necessarily list that as a reason not to play the game. And I don't think it would really get too much in the way of someone's ability to enjoy it, but it's just something that I think you have to mention about this game when you're talking about it, just because, you know, it's narrative, it's a dialogue heavy game. And so you can't just, you know, you can't ignore that part of it.
Agreed. Yeah,
but anyways, like it's Life is Strange. I still think it's good, even though, you know, different voice actor, different studio, it's definitely worth playing.
Yeah. I mean, there's only what, 3 episodes, I believe.
Yeah. Like I said, so I think it's like a three episode game with a bonus episode if you purchase the deluxe edition. And then I also believe that if you purchase the deluxe edition, it has another mode in the game, which I think allows you to take the licensed soundtrack in the game and kind of like remix the soundtrack to certain scenes in the game, just as something fun to do. That's cool, I guess, which is you know, music is another big part of Life is Strange too. So you know, having only played part of one episode, I can't really speak too much to the soundtrack at this point, but you know, the music is definitely there.
Good stuff. Gonna get it for sure. Should have gotten it already.
Yeah. I mean, there's just like, again, there's just so much to play, but I don't want people to forget about this game when a bunch of other stuff is coming out. a wild Matt has appeared.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Welcome.
Thanks.
To the Rated Nah podcast.
Welcome back to the world of the living, Ash.
Thanks. I was living in the dark ages, literally. Mm. It was fun. But we've been talking about news, and we've been talking about reviews, and I was about to talk about Iron Marines and how you guys reviewed it quite well.
Did I? Because I felt rambly as shit on that podcast.
No. I thought it was really good.
There's so much to talk about in the game, I think, is the thing. Like, it's very deep. It's a deep game.
Well, let's talk just for a few more minutes, because first of all, one thing that I wanted to commend Ironhide on was making it so you don't need an internet connection to play Iron Marines, because I didn't have one for about 12 days.
Kept you sane.
Yeah, because I could, you know, I would charge my iPad in my car and then the sun would go down and I would blow my candles out and I would turn on my iPad, put my headphones on, and I would play video games while drenched in sweat. You know, like you guys said last week on the show, it's an absolutely fantastic RTS, and it's a real RTS, perhaps. Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, on a mobile device, it's the first real RTS where you actually have command over your individual units, and there's different objectives, and I don't want to say a story, but there is
stuff. A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, and there's stuff going on. There's boss fights, which are fantastically done.
So, I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead. So I don't know what I was going to say next. That's kind of how I operate, so yeah.
Me either, ever. We're improving. I'm at a point in the game where I can't beat I don't know if it's the final boss, but I'll say the first planet's boss, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because there's like, what, 2 unlocked planets right now? And then I think it looks like they're going to release more, feasibly, is what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm on the first map, I'm at the first boss, and I feel like I hit a point where I'm like having to sort of grind. Like I have to level up either I need to buy a bunch of stuff to keep that guy from just charging through my base without any issue, or I need to kind of grind whichever captain I want to run with and have him level up or her level up enough that I can use that character, you know, effectively.
Right.
Did you hit that point, or did I just play too fast or something? Like, what do you think? Or did I mismanage my upgrades or something like that?
No, I think that boss is supposed to be pretty hard.
And it ramps. I will say the ramp to that boss is sudden. It's like a hockey stick when you hit that boss. Like, he just charges through. The first time you play him, I assume you lost as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I found in general the boss fights, what I end up doing is I build a lot of snipers. And so you kind of run the snipers around, and they'll just continually do damage and stuff. But I think... there is a little bit of grinding in the game, but for me, like, the grinding is fun because I like unlocking all the abilities of the different hero units.
Sure.
So it's really cool. I mean, and you know, for our listeners that maybe didn't listen to the last episode and don't really get what the game is, it's pretty much a mobile version of StarCraft, like you guys said, but in the best way possible. It's optimized for touch controls. Everything's streamlined. It's a little less micromanagey. Base building is also heavily simplified.
Art style straight out of like Kingdom Rush. Like, the art style is really cool.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's so much fun to look at. And, you know, the gameplay is so addictive that, you know, even though I didn't have very many options of what to play during that particular period, I still find myself trying to like find time right now, like with other like consoles and my PC and everything. And I'm like, I kind of want to play a couple rounds of Iron Marines and, you know, level up this unit a little bit more. Just to add a little bit more to what you guys said last week, you know, Ironhide absolutely knocked out of the park. It's so much fun. The second world that you go to is a completely different style of play and different enemy types. It's like a cybernetic sort of Cybertron robot world.
Cool.
And you have like all sorts of new robot enemies that fight differently. And there are even some like puzzly kind of maps where you have to time different things and move units at certain times without being like crushed by different traps. It's like, it's just super well done. You know, and it, I, you know, a lot of it is just, in my opinion, just genius design by Ironhide. And, you know, I know the game's doing well. It's being very, very well reviewed. And, you know, if you're into mobile games at all, you've probably already picked this one up. But if you haven't, or if you're perhaps wondering, you know, or you know, there are a lot of people that just don't play mobile games, but, this is something like, if you have a mobile device, like, by all means, get this fucking game.
I haven't played it on my phone, and I have the Plus, so I have more screen real estate. But I will say, I got an iPad Pro recently, and I played it on that, and it is like utterly gorgeous on that tablet. It's such like a big landscape for that game to be played on, you know, and it just looks beautiful and like plays so smoothly. And they nailed that kind of art style and kind of the fluidity of the game. I will say, after saying I didn't do this or wasn't going to last week, right? Yeah. I did. They keep an eye on the store because they're running sales intermittently on the Heroes. And I picked up two Heroes for like $1.99. They sold two of the cheaper ones for as like a pair for $2. And I did that and then started playing as one of them. It's the girl who's in like the mech suit.
Oh, cool.
She's awesome. And I was like, oh, this is so much fun. Like each kind of hero plays totally differently, and like you have to kind of adjust how you play that hero once you move them into the game. And man, it's just they are so killer at this stuff. It's really kind of
crazy. Yeah. There's one that I can't remember his name now. I wish I could, but his style of play was so fun because he's like a robot that looks like a giant TV set, and his ability is he's surrounded by different orbs. And when you can switch his modes. And so one mode, he's like a happy TV set and he's like a smiley face and he heals all your units like a bard. So you can kind of walk him in between all your units and he'll heal them. But then if you switch his mode to like the angry TV set, all the orbs shoot electric bolts and he can send them out as like explosive mines. And so he becomes like insanely deadly. But then as his orbs deplete, he becomes a little bit less useful. So you're kind of like managing switching between his happy and angry modes and also keeping track of the number of orbs that he has. And it's just so innovative and so cool for like a hero unit. And I would venture to say that like a lot of these hero units play like MOBA characters. And so you're in control of basically like one MOBA character, and then you have your RTS units as well. So it's just awesome. Like, and I'm, you know, I have to fly in a couple weeks and I'm like, I'm going to play that game for 5 hours. You know, like I'm going to play this the whole time and love every second of it. So good stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
So still highly recommended.
Yes. Double.
Triple.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you start
playing? Yeah, I did. I actually started playing it too.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people that doesn't play a ton of mobile games anymore. And I picked this up and I was like, yeah, this is great.
Are you playing it on your phone then?
I do have an iPad, but I don't use.
Oh, you have the mini.
Yeah,
right?
I don't use it that often. Yeah. But it looks pretty good on the phone as well. It's not
awesome.
It's definitely serviceable. So,
yeah.
Let's see. So, I want to talk about the TV show The Orville, which is the new show from Seth MacFarlane, which is a kind of billed as a comedy, science fiction space show, drama. Does that make sense? I guess.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know how to feel about it yet, but the thing that I think is interesting about it is that, there was clearly some, I think, objectives they wanted to achieve in building the show, meaning like they wanted to do things like to use miniatures and more practical effects to do some of the, space stuff in the show. And, I'm not a big Star Trek watcher, but I think this show definitely is fully inspired by Star Trek. It kind of has that weird vibe of a show like Star Trek a Stargate, where, you know, characters will be in space, but then all of a sudden are just walking around on a planet that just looks like Earth, where they're like in the forest with weird alien races and they're still wearing their spacesuits. So there's that weird kind of like juxtaposition of, you know, tech with nature, which kind of happens a lot in shows like this. The other thing that is fantastic about the show is there's like a full orchestra score for the show, which I think is kind of like maybe the high point of the show, is that you know, much in the same way that Star Wars is, you know, fully supported by like a like incredible score, like this show tries to capture some of that magic as well and kind of add some kind of like gravity to what is happening in the show. I don't think the show would be near as, compelling without the score in the Orville. But Seth MacFarlane plays the captain of the Orville. Her name is Adrienne from S.H.I.E.L.D. Adrienne Pilecki.
Yeah, Pilecki.
Plays like his ex-wife who becomes assigned to the Orville. So they, you know, like bicker back and forth. And then, of course, there's like a cast of characters that are on the ship as well. And there's only been...
So is it, I mean, it sounds like right now you're kind of describing like a, basically a Star Trek show, but it's a comedy, yeah, right? Is it like Galaxy Quest or like Other Space, or is it like fucking like just like slapsticky? Like what is the general tone?
I would say that it is like Star Trek with some Seth MacFarlane humor in it, but not like Family Guy humor. You know, it doesn't go that far as to like trying to be offensive at times. But maybe the jokes are sort of, I mean, they're definitely Seth MacFarlane jokes. Like if you've seen any of the Star Wars specials where, you know, like the show is like a serious kind of like sci-fi show in the sense where they're exploring, you know, just in the same way Star Trek kind of tried to explore interesting issues, social and cultural issues. Like there was definitely an episode of this show that did something like that. And then there also just happens to be humor at times in the same way where it's like all of a sudden characters stop and then there's a joke and then, you know, all of a sudden it's serious again. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, without the humor, it might just be Star Trek, Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek, but it's got the humor component as well, which is, you know, it just adds something different to the show. And it kind of, for me at this point, having only seen a few episodes and not really being able to form a strong opinion of it, like I want to watch it. I'm happy that a show like this exists on broadcast television, and I don't know that I'd be watching something in its place if it weren't on. So maybe other than like Marvel shows on Netflix or something like that, but right. And it's so, I feel like it's becoming harder to find sci-fi on broadcast television. Like obviously you can go watch The Expanse on sci-fi, but like as far as like major networks are concerned, like that stuff seems to be drying up, which is too bad. So I kind of want it to succeed, but I'm kind of more interested to see what happens over time, just because it does kind of tread into that bizarre category of like not really existing in the context of something else, just in the same way that you would watch a really strange episode of Stargate where they go visit some alien race, they, you know, learn something weird about that race, and then by the end of the episode, like all the characters are better for it or something. So I don't know. I just, neither of you guys are watching it, right? So it's hard to.
Yeah. I watched the first one and then I.
Yeah, you didn't like it. Yeah.
Decided it was not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I think it's kind of like polarizing in that way. But, you know, again, things I like about it is like, I like the practical effects. I like what they're trying to do, and the music is fantastic. So. Probably just need to see where this goes, like by the end of the, you know, this season. But Fox is really good at canceling science fiction, so we'll see what happens. Even with Seth MacFarlane running the show, like you'll never.
It appears to be doing okay because it follows Gotham, and the ratings are like all right. They're not like killer, and they're not terrible. So it'll probably. I don't know if they'll stick around for another season for sure. Yeah. But it'll probably at least make it through this.
And
season.
Gotham is still, you know, it still is what it is. But it is the. I think they've figured out like what fans like and don't like about the show. And,
right.
Like now that they're into a new season, they can sort of better cater to what, you know, to what people like about that show, which is,
yeah.
I mean, basically it's like, it's a prequel take on what I think to be Tim Burton's Batman, just the way that the characters behave and act, you know? So,
yeah. I will say, Melissa and I started Star Trek, the new one, Star Trek Discover. Yeah. And it seems to be hitting. So all of my coworkers are like hardcore Star Trek fans. Like they watch they watch like Next Generation and Deep Space and all that, or Deep Space Nine, right? Deep Nine.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Deep Space Nine.
You can tell I'm a giant Star Trek fan.
me as well.
And I will say that this show appears to be hitting sort of like that mix of actual plot and action, and then still kind of the old school Star Trek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To maybe keep me around. So it'll be interesting to see with the return of sort of genre sci-fi that I feel like is sort of happening right now, what happens to some of these more oddball takes on genre sci-fi, if that
makes
sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to see it like back on the broadcast networks, even if, you know, that show mm-hmm. is going straight to CBS Digital, but still, you know, it's still...
Yeah, yeah. I have who knows what the deal
still
with that
back
is,
by that yeah. network, so I think that's...
It would surprise... If they do it for two seasons... I mean, if that's the way it always rolls, then amazing. But there's part of me that feels like, depending on how the numbers with the digital go, because it's not a cheap show. Mm. That show is like, they're spending millions per episode to make that show. So, like, if the digital numbers don't pump to where they want it, I think I could see them moving it to broadcast before canceling. You know what I mean? So who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows what they do there.
I've heard good things about the new Star Trek, though.
It's weird that both these shows would come out at the same time, and maybe you've hit the nail on the head where it's like we went through this phase where it was superheroes, you know, because we had Heroes come out, and then some other shows around that, and then it became like fantasy with, you know, Merlin and Once Upon a Time, and so maybe this is, and then, you know, Pirates kind of like slotted in there for like a moment, and then now we're maybe moving on to moving back into science fiction, so...
Well, I think you've seen Cable kind of drive the ship, mm-hmm. you know? So when Game of Thrones is out, everybody's trying to do fantasy. And it's like, obviously, generally a lesser than version of fantasy, but it's like, they're still trying, mm-hmm. you know? And then when you see stuff like Expanse or I would even probably say Westworld kind of like blow up.
Yes.
Or even to an extent, Mr. Robot, which is maybe a slightly different type of take on sci-fi. I guess it's not really such genre. But when you see those shows kind of explode and get followings, you see this kind of like scramble to do that, you know, like to follow in that kind of step or figure out what the next step is there.
Right.
So you get these kind of weird networky takes on this, because the network shows, while we'll always have the biggest following, will always be kind of a mildly lesser than version, weirdly, uh-huh. than this like weird golden era of cable that we're in. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's weird. But I watched Orville. It was way too much more of an homage to Star Trek to me than I cared about. Like, it had no nostalgia bait for me, I guess, essentially. Yeah,
the first episode was definitely hard to watch because they had to go through the agonizing pain of introducing all the characters on the ship.
Yeah.
And then since then, each episode has sort of appeared to have focused on each of the supporting characters on the ship. So it's like, it's much more easier to digest when you learn about one at a time instead of going like, hey, this person's engineering, this person's communications, this person flies the ship, and you're like, wait, what? You know?
Yeah, I just meant that, like, the thing that I like about, you know, this modern, like, J.J. Abrams era take of Star Trek is the thing that everyone that's, like, an actual Star Trek fan hates, you know? So, like, I get that. So when I watched The Orville, I was like, oh, this is just, like, an actual nod to Star Trek, and like, I have nothing here kind of thing. So
Right. Understood. Yeah, I'm not...
So it's cool. I mean, we'll see. I think it'll make it through the first season. I don't know that they'll keep going with it, but you never know.
Like, I think the reason why you couldn't get into it is maybe the reason why I could, which is me having never seen Star Trek before and feeling like I could never get in on the ground floor of that show. Like having something new come along where it's like, I can start at this episode one and I don't need to, I didn't need to see any of the previous iterations of this show. I feel like I can start over on the ground floor with Orville.
Yeah. Cool.
This is Hannah Tull from Life is Strange, and you're listening to the Rated NA Podcast.
Let's talk about the SNES Classic, because, you know, here we are on release day. It sounds like people were able to buy them, which is incredible.
Yeah.
I have a funny story. I stopped by this morning because I had a pre-order from Best Buy. I was like one of those lucky people that was up in the middle of the night and actually got to pre-order it. So I had a pre-order email with me, And there was a line when I got to Best Buy, like around the Best Buy. And I'm standing in the line and the guy comes up and hands me like a yellow ticket. And he's like, all right, here's your ticket for your SNES Classic. And foolishly, I was like, oh, I already have a pre-order.
You could have had two.
I could have had two. But yeah, so they did exist this morning. You just had to go. I wasn't even that early. I was maybe there at like 9:45 and they opened at 10 and I was able to get one. So it was possible. Have you opened yours yet, Scott? Have you messed around with it?
No, mine's coming from Target. So it's not it's like Target apparently has no sense of urgency in shipping the units. Feel free to spoil away.
I'll spoil a little bit. I think the UI is actually really cool. It's really very, very simple. It basically just has all the cards laid out. You can kind of select which one of the games you want to play. The thing that I thought was really cool is there's an option called display, which people have probably touched on, but you can actually choose how you actually want to view the games on your new fancy TV. Okay. You can actually put a fake CRT filter on it, so it actually does the lines from old TVs. You can do it in standard 4x3, or you can do a pixel perfect sort of cleaned up version of the games if you kind of want to see what they'd look like with improved graphics. So you can do that, and there's also different frames because the games are all 4x3 and TVs now are rectangular, so that doesn't really work. But you can put different frames around the game, so you can just make it all black, and or you can add things like wood frame. There's one that looks like an old TV set, so it looks like you're rectangular TV is now an old TV, which I think is pretty awesome. Cool. And there's all sorts of different shapes and colors and like matrixy lines and you know, gimmicky stuff like that. But I thought that was a neat addition. On top of that, I was talking to Scott just kind of as we're getting started, and I kind of forgot how hard these old games are. Like, it's been like a really long time, probably like well over 20 years since I played some of these games. And and I was just playing Punch-Out as we were getting started, and Super Punch-Out, by the way, not the original Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. And oh my Lord, it is not easy. And I also had like this strange moment where I also fired up Street Fighter II Turbo for the SNES. And this is a game that I played endlessly in my youth with my friends. Like, we just played so much Street Fighter II Turbo on the SNES that it was like, it was, you know, we actually, and no shit, we played so much that we would get these honking blisters on our thumbs. Because, you know, these games were not designed to be played on a hard ass plastic D-pad and for like, you know, 8 hours at a time. That's just not, the human body is not meant for that sort of torture. But so I fired Street Fighter II Turbo up again, and instantly it was like, oh boy, this was a little rough around the edges back in the day. But now,
doesn't this console have, didn't they add a rewind mechanic to this console so that like it could kind of help people out with some of these more difficult games?
Yeah, so there's also, it has a basically suspend anywhere, so you can like leave the game and you know, go about your business, come back, and it basically you can save any of the games at any point. And there also is a rewind mechanic to let you go back if you're, you know, you're trying to like perfect Super Mario World without ever dying or something like that. You can actually just use the rewind mechanic and cheat your way through it, which I think is pretty cool. What I wish was in this was a recreation of the Game Genie.
Oh my gosh.
You guys remember Game Genie?
Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Of course.
Oh man, I never actually had one. I rented one for like a couple times just for different games.
Yeah, for real. Like, you feel like you felt like such like a hacker back then when you had the Game Genie.
Because they really would. They would hack the carts in like the weirdest ways possible. And I don't even remember what the inputs were for Game Genies. I think you had to like actually put in different codes and stuff, if memory serves correctly, but it would do the weirdest shit to your games, you know, just like, hey, you want to play Mario, but it's Luigi, put in the Game Genie. You're like, oh my gosh. So I wish there was a Game Genie this time around. But anyway, I think it's pretty cool. Like I said before, many months ago, I plan on letting my son in probably a year or two, you know, hop around and play some of this stuff. when he can actually, you know, move his fingers in that way, which is, I think it'll be a good introduction to game playing. So, glad I picked it up. I think it's neat. I look forward to hearing what you think, Scott.
Yeah. I mean, just looking at the titles, like these are, I feel like these are some of my all time favorites. Like you, I bought it, you know, maybe for the nostalgic factor and to share it, someday. I think looking at the, what is it, 21 titles on this system or something to that effect.
Yeah.
I think I've played, you know, maybe all but two of them. So the ones that I'd probably be most excited for personally are like Secret of Mana and to check out that Star Fox 2. And Super Castlevania 4 is still, I think, one of my top five games and I never get sick of playing it. So it's just nice to kind of like have that again. In you know, like this is presentation, right? Presentation is everything. Of course I could like fire these games up on some other console, my computer, my actual Super Nintendo, right? But this lineup, you know, like I was saying earlier, is like so much stronger than the NES lineup, just by virtue of like I think these games would still hold up today. And I don't know, it sounds like they do from the sound effects I've been hearing on your end during this podcast.
Only during the breaks. Only during the breaks.
Okay. Fair enough.
I didn't know you could hear me.
No, that's fine. I don't mind. I mean, I don't get sick of hearing those sounds. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Matt.
Yeah. So, do you guys remember a while back I talked about a mobile game called Ticket to Earth that I picked up, which was a sort of like match three.
Oh, it was like had that strategy. Narrative. It had beautiful artwork. I remember.
Yeah, it had a like crazy beautiful artwork. It had like a narrative. It was like a match three strategy fighting game on a grid. We at the time were like, oh well, chapter one's out. It's $4.99 or whatever the price was, $6.99, something like that. And I was like, you know, even if the other chapters aren't included, I think it's absolutely worth it. It's a super fun game. Well. Surprise, surprise, they actually wrote us after that review, and I didn't get a chance to bring it up, but they wrote and were like, oh no, all the other chapters are going to be included.
Oh, man.
I was like, oh, that's cool. So I went back and checked, and the second chapter is out now. It's called Crash. So it's the same exact game in the App Store. If you go buy Ticket to Earth right now, you'll get chapter one and chapter two. They added new characters, there's new powers, there's a whole new upgrade system for the new character that they added. There's new enemy types. It is absolutely loaded to the gills now with content.
The game is back down to $5 as well. For some reason, I feel like you got it for like $3. And
I think I got it on sale. Yeah.
And then I went to go look at it and it was like $6.99 and now it's $4.99, which seems completely reasonable. So
at $4.99, I can't recommend this game high enough. I talked about it ad nauseum and I don't remember the episode number, but basically, the gist of it is you play as one of three characters, sometimes all three on the same map, which is super fun. You get this set of objectives that'll give you extra bonuses for every map that you go to. And then you are working your way through this story of this sort of future version of Earth that's dealt with some stuff that's happened. And there's like this kind of prison break in chapter one that leads you to go into a different part of the world in chapter two. And there's like a sort of there's some shenanigans going on with a doctor and some like zombie type villains, but there's still like the gang that you deal with in chapter one is still there. So it kind of just keeps growing in scope. But it is super, super fun. Tons of power sets, like such a great fun game to play. You can play offline. I don't think it requires internet there, Ash. I can't recommend the game enough. And now that chapter two is out and it's still $5, like go buy it. There's zero reason not to buy this game at this point. The company I believe is called Robot Circus and the game is called Ticket to Earth.
So it's always interesting when studios find you and correct you.
Yeah. I think they commented on the actual episode itself on our show, which is why I didn't respond quick enough, because by the time I saw it, I was like, oh, we did not know that that happened.
We can issue a retraction or a correction, I guess.
Yeah, so this is our correction here. You can go buy the game now and you're going to get two chapters of content. And I believe there's still plans for like two or three more chapters after that. So there's almost no reason to not pick it up. It was episode number 268 of the Rated NA podcast. So not that long ago, actually.
About, feels like forever ago at this point.
Probably about 6 months ago. Yeah, it was April.
But I mean, now with the new iOS 11, with game, you know, in the App Store, the game previews can be animated now. Mm-hmm. So if you just pull up that game in the store, you can see the game in action. It looks incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The animation is fantastic. So. Sweet. So anyways, go pick it up. Ticket to Earth. It is, you know, $5 action RPG match 3 type game and super fun.
Cool.
And now you got more to play.
Well, before before we wrap up the show, I thought we could spend just a couple minutes sharing some stories related to old school or classic gaming from back in the day and sort of to celebrate the release of the SNES Classic.
Cool.
Yeah, we didn't get a ton of responses, but I know that I have a couple of stories to tell, and maybe you guys do too.
Sure.
But we did get something in the mailbag.
From
Robert Freemering. He says, my fondest memory of playing NES is my big brother and I playing Road Blasters in his room till early morning and getting caught by dad when he was getting home from work. Keep up the great work, NA crew. Thank you, Robert. And that's that's what it was all about. Like staying up all night, playing.
Oh, yeah.
I did that with RC Pro-Am, man. I totally get that. How about you guys? You guys have any?
Man, I have so many. Yeah. My buddy Mark used to stay up. He like never was a big gamer, but he would always just like watch me play. He was such a cool like wingman. Mm-hmm. And I remember one night we stayed up and we had two PCs and we hooked up Doom with printer ports and played multiplayer Doom. I guess there was some like hack you could do or some sort of like shareware shit that we got that we could do multiplayer. And it was my first time doing like multiplayer PC on like two different monitors, and it was so like wild to me. You know, this is probably like the very early 90s, right? And so we played like literally until the sun came up, and then I remember like we went out for breakfast. And he started hallucinating and seeing like the Doom monsters in the street. I just remember laugh, like, you know, when you're like a teenager, you just laugh hysterically at everything. And we were just like crying, laughing, exhausted, seeing Doom monsters in the street and just having like the best time, at how ridiculous that was. And, that was like, it became a very regular occurrence. Like then, you know, it was just games for the next 20 years on the weekends, LAN parties all the time. Like, you know, it was a gateway drug to a big problem.
That's awesome. Yeah. Do you remember the first time you ever played a game online with someone else?
Online?
Yeah, like actually got connected to the internet and you started playing. Like, so my first game I think was Quake. And
It might have been Quake. That was like when that stuff really started kind of taking off. Mine may have been Quake too. Yeah.
But the thing is like Quake, back then you needed special software in order to do it. Like I used this program, I think it was called Kali, and it basically looked at your game library and helped you, you know, connect through these servers in order to play games with other people that maybe the games themselves weren't even configured to do that properly other than like local. It basically turned LAN-based games into you know, games that could be played over the internet. And so I want to say maybe Duke Nukem had like a multiplayer component as well. I just remember thinking like, this is the future. This is amazing. I can't believe this is happening. But to, you know, you mentioned Wingman. I remember when I was a kid playing Super Metroid, I had this, neighborhood friend, his name was Len. And he was my wingman for Super Metroid. And I'm going to spoil Super Metroid, okay, for anybody that hasn't played it at this point.
About to play it right now.
Or is about to play it right now. So you can skip ahead if you don't want to know what happens in this game. But long story short, when you
like 30
years ago. Yeah. But long story short, when you get to the end of the game, you fight Mother Brain. And Mother Brain, you know, purposely basically brings you to the brink of death, right? And you think that your character is going to die in the game, and it's all kind of like scripted through this like interesting battle, because it, you know, they give you the ability to try and defeat her and you can't. And then just as she's about to deliver sort of like the killing blow, like a Metroid that you kind of befriended throughout the game swoops in the last minute to save your life, and then basically sucks the energy out of Mother Brain and transfers it to you to give you this like super weapon to destroy Mother Brain. And I just remember in that moment thinking like, oh my God, this game is over. Like I believed it. I was like, this game is over and I'm going to lose. And like, you know, the save game is gone and everything. And when the thing swooped in and stole the energy, gave it to me, my buddy stood up like he was like, you know, in my rap entourage and was like, what? Like started, he was like screaming in my bedroom and like jumping around on the bed and everything. I was like, yeah. And I got up too and I was like, yeah. And the whole thing just like
disintegrated. So
like the last, you know, 10 minutes of that game just like disintegrated into pure chaos because, of course, at the end of that game, you have this like super weapon and you just kind of like obliterate her. And I just remember that being like so incredible, gaming moment, just to have somebody like there with you. Like it was like, you know, Twitch, right? With one person in your bedroom.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's the house used to be. It's how it used to be.
How it used to be back in the day. How about you, Matt?
Man, I'm kind of the same. There's so many, and a lot of them involve you, Scott. So it'd be a bunch of those, but, I'm trying to think if I go way back, and I have an interesting question to pose really quick and then we can either get out of here or whatever. But if I go way back, it would be my friend and I, Tim, same thing, neighborhood friend. He had a Sega Master System and we would go, and his mom bought him a TV for his room because she couldn't watch daytime TV when we were over. Like she loved watching like Hunter and like all those like like manly cop shows, you know, that were on when we were kids. And so we would sit in his room and play
Space Harrier.
Yes. Jeez, that was, like left my brain.
That's like
right
one of your favorite games. Yeah.
We would play it. Oh my God! Like endlessly, we'd play it. Until our, so the difference between the Nintendo, you were talking about how you would, your hands would like bleed essentially, like you'd beat the crap out of your hands. The Master System, what would happen was the controller was so misshapen that your like the balls of your hands, I guess the palm, like the, below your thumb, would get all swollen. It would get like super, super swollen. So you'd walk around with these weird like Mickey Mouse glove hands after you played for way too long. We would play Space Harrier. We would just switch back and forth all the time. And the same thing happened to us. I remember beating Space Harrier, or not beating, but getting like basically to the end. Is maybe we did beat it.
That's a hard game.
And just cheer, like going absolutely crazy, like just screaming in our room that we had actually done it, because it was such an insanely hard game to play. But yeah, Space Harrier on the Master System was just like, that was crack to me and Tim. I have a question that I want to ask though, real quick, of you guys. Do you think that nostalgia games, the ones that you truly have like unbreakable love for, are better served, are the games that haven't been ruined since? Does that make sense? Like, or haven't been redone over and over again, or have 12 versions out by now, or whatever it might be. Like, I hold, like, Metal Gear Solid will always have like a deep, deep spot in my heart and soul, you know? And that's like another game that I would think of playing just endlessly throughout the night at my house. But there's so many versions of it now, and it's like borderline impossible for me to play. There's like, it's so difficult. Like it's scaled up in difficulty, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's less of, I don't think of it as nostalgically. I think of that one game more nostalgically, but it's hard to think about others. But whereas Space Harrier, you know, is a one-off of a game that existed a very long time ago and essentially can't get ruined for me at this point. I feel like if I went back and played it now, I'd probably hate it, but like, you know, whatever.
I mean, like I said, Castlevania 4 is like pretty much unruinable for me, just because the music was great and it used, you know, the Mode 7 graphics from the Super Nintendo for the time, which were like incredible. And the gameplay sort of offered like more freedom of whipping things than what you could do in like previous Castlevania games. So for me, I feel like that was kind of like a turning point in like in that series. And I don't think it was ever ruined And I never really played any of the games like before or after, and that one just kind of resonated with me in a way that none of the other ones have. So I would say that it still has some staying power for me. But I certainly do remember certain games that were just like super deep cuts that you know, that I will like certainly never forget for sure.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I do think like some games have, or even franchises have kind of lost their magic over the years. Right. When I think about like what the first three Resident Evils kind of like meant to me as like a young person, like, you know, my teenage years, and then later on, like, you know, moving away to college, playing Resident Evil, like those games were like fantastic. And I think like over time, like the creative team is a different creative team entirely. And like that game is a completely different animal than what it was in the 90s, you know? And so, yeah, it doesn't feel the same to me anymore. And I think there's a lot of games like that, beyond Resident Evil. I think like a lot of the stuff Capcom did, like they'll never be able to recreate the magic of the Mega Man series. You know, even something like Street Fighter is essentially the same, but now it's, you know, it's designed for competitive play, and it's designed to have these like, you know, insanely challenging combos and depth far beyond what it was in the 90s, you know? Yeah. And so that to me, like that, I can't play it anymore. Like I'm just not good at it. So I think like a lot of those games I grew up on, they're very, very special because in some ways they were easier, in some ways they were a lot harder, you know? And I just don't think games will ever be the way that they were during that era. So
it's just a thought I had, because I was like, you know, even if like Street Fighter is a perfect example. Like it's like, I can't play it anymore. Like I'm not, and I'll pick it up, or Mortal Kombat. That's actually one that probably has more, because I bought it on Genesis and I played it endlessly on Genesis. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And like I loved the shit out of Mortal Kombat. I buy the new ones now on occasion, like every few versions of it, and play it for a little bit, and it's like fun, but then I'm like, it just doesn't, like it will never live up to what it was when I was, you know, 13 or whatever and playing at my house. So
right those all the fighting games, you kind of hit a wall and you're like, I can't play this against other people.
Like that's not gonna happen.
I just remember going to your mall, Matt. We'd play Mortal Kombat in the arcade, then we'd walk over to the Kmart that was attached to the mall, and then tear the pages out of the magazine that have the moves in them, and then go back and like do the moves at the arcade on the machine.
Everybody had a Kmart in their mall, right? And a Publix and a Blockbuster.
No, I think that was only that mall. I don't think I've ever seen anywhere else.
Such a bizarre mall.
The last story I wanted to tell just very quickly is with F-Zero on the Super Nintendo, which is on the new one as well, the classic console. I remember being at a party once, and it was hooked up to somebody's TV at their house, and I was like trying to talk to this girl, and just for some reason I was just like, I'll tell you what, I was like, if I can finish this race with my eyes closed, like maybe you'll give me your phone number. And she was like,
is this a real thing?
And she was like yeah, sure, whatever. And then I did it and got the phone number, and I don't remember who the girl was. I feel bad about that, but I did try that. I tried that line on somebody.
Have I never told stories about Scott being an absolute like ladies' man all the way through like middle school?
All right,
school
that's all we have for episode 287 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on social media, and we'll see you next week.
Man. I didn't know you were such a player.
I love it. Just you playing Super Nintendo behind all of this, Ash.
I am
There's
not
like a clicking sound.
I
what
am
is that?
Not about to beat a Mega Man boss right now.
It's totally acceptable. It's appropriate for this segment.
Oh man, I don't know how to meet. I don't remember how to beat the fire boss in Mega Man X. It's been 25 years.
You can come look at my Nintendo powers that probably have that game in it.
Yeah, he probably has hard copy on that.
Probably. That's amazing. Well, guys, this was fun. next week, we are going to have special guest Tanika Anderson back on the show to talk about You and May. So definitely stay tuned to that one. That's a special episode that I'm quite proud of. And special thanks to Scott for cleaning up the audio on that one. I very much appreciate it. You guys can follow us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Email us directly, nerds@nerdappropriate.com. You can go to twitch.tv/nerdappropriate, Mixer, Nerdtastic79. Is that our mixer name, Scott?
I think it's just our team name is just Rated NA.
Rated your NA screen name is Mixer.
Nerd Appropriate, and mine is Retrolog, and I think Matt's is just Matt History. So that's not that hard.
Perfect. But yeah, we'll be back next week with all new stuff, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Punch out so hard
because it's hard. Games are hard back then.
I can't get past the second guy.